I love it. We don't even know when the show starts. We're just constantly talking on the Freedom Fiends. We cannot be restrained. This is
Michael, let's see what's on the radio.
Okay, let's go see what's on the radio. Yeah, we probably should. A good thing we don't, you know, we have the Carell rule where we don't cuss during breaks or intros or outros or before shows or after shows. And that's how we don't cuss when we don't even know we're on radio. Hi, Davy Barker. Yeah.
Well, the rule I follow is I don't cuss unless I mean it, which is very rare.
Words to live by. Powerful and baffling words to live by. Yeah, weren't you? I'm a member of Doctors Without Boundaries. Yeah, no, I'm sorry. Michael Dean, MD, from Doctors Without Boundaries.
I think it's Borders.
Mine is Doctors Without Boundaries. That's Doctors a joke. That's from House. Yeah, House says he's a member of Doctors Without Boundaries.
Okay. Which is that like George Costanza's Human Fund?
What does that do?
Well, there's an episode of Seinfeld where it doesn't exist. It's just a made up charity that he gives people donations to as gifts. Like he gives people birthday cards and Christmas cards that say, I've given to the Human Fund in your name. Happy birthday.
He just keeps the money or what?
He just keeps the money. Yeah, it's fake.
I like it. You know, speaking of things that transcend borders and, you know, lists that we get ourselves on. I realized today that I funneled money to Africa through ISIL a while back.
Really? That might not be something you want to say on airwaves.
Well, here's the thing. The ISIL I gave money to was not the, what is it? The Islamic, what does that stand
for?
The Levant.
State of something. Idiots Libya? In the
Levant.
I don't know.
It's idiots in the Levant, I think.
Idiots in the Levant.
Do I dare say that? Are they going to hear me and cut my head off on radio?
I don't know. I don't know.
No, the ISIL I gave money to was the International Society for Individual Liberty. It's ISIL.org. And unfortunately for them, they've had that name for 15 or 20 years. They're a long-running, old-school libertarian think tank and educational organization in San Francisco that
wow, that's unfortunate.
Well, it's here's how old school they are. They still like have a printed newsletter and they print books and like give them to and sell them at cost to universities. And they were working with this friend of mine, Kofi. I don't even want to say my friend's name. This has nothing to do with ISIL or ISIS, the terrorist group.
Their logo even looks like an ISIL logo. It's like the letters ISIL, like right over the Middle East on this world map.
Oh, man. Am I the first person to point this out? I don't know.
I think you may be.
I'm probably not doing myself, Kofi, or them a favor. They are nothing to do with force or aggression or beheadings. They are like a bunch of, you know, libertarian billionaire businessmen who probably still vote, but vote for smaller government, who publish, you know, pamphlets and books on Austrian economics and send them around the world on pallets.
Well, you know, hundreds of thousands of Americans every day transfer money through ISIS when they're at the convenience store.
Oh, yeah. Isn't that credit card payment company, ISIS?
Yeah, there's one of those. ISIS is the name of a company that makes those credit card swiping machines. So, you're at the grocery store or the convenience store, anywhere where you're swiping a credit card, maybe a gas station, look around for an ISIS logo.
It might send money to ISIS. Doesn't it say that on the back? Yeah.
It does say that. It says swipe card to send money to ISIS.
Yeah. So, there's this cat named Kofi who's a cool guy who he has nothing to do with ISIS or ISIL, but he runs a libertarian like school in Africa, in Ghana, Africa. And I helped him raise money, and it's not a scam. This is they're right next to Nigeria, but it's not a Nigerian money scam. I actually know people who've gone from ISIL, who've gone to Africa and worked side by side with Kofi on one of his presentations of African children teaching them.
Man,
about
that thing sounds
market.
Like something you have to qualify every time you say it. You can't say you know someone
it
from
does.
ISIL.
But I I mailed him a box of, you know, like an old DV mini DV video camera and a bunch of cables and some, you know, floppy disk record. I don't know, hard disk record, like basically all the equipment that I had in my basement that I don't use anymore. And I got on the Fiends and got people to send equipment. I got some little, you know, handspring PDAs and some internet routers. And I sent them a box that was like 4 feet by 4 feet full of equipment to Africa. And I raised like $350 for him, and my dad raised like seven. We get everybody in trouble. My dad raised like $700 through his Rotary International group, and we sent it all to Ike because it's really hard to just like, you know, if you send it Western Union to Ghana, I don't even know if you can, but it cannot PayPal to Ghana, but if you Western Union, they take like 40% of it or something. So we sent it to ISIL, and they have like a bank over there somehow, and they can wire transfer it. And ISIL, International Society for Individual Liberty in San Francisco, actually was matching funds dollar for dollar. So between my dad and I, we raised like, you know, $1,050 for Kofi, and then ISIL doubled that and then sent it to Africa. So I have funneled money to Africa through ISIL.
You know, somewhere in Ohio, some entry-level NSA goon is like, he can't believe what he's hearing.
He's like,
peeking over the cubicle wall to his neighbor. He's like, can you believe this?
He's trying to get like his neighbor's attention, who's playing like Angry Squittens on YouTube, and trying to get him to like run in and wake up his boss that's asleep in the other room in his corner.
Trying to angle for that promotion.
Yeah, speaking of lies, I'm not doubting there are some bad guys in the Middle East who want to kill people and act like the state. But I find the whole like scare tactic of it, of they're the new Russians, really funny. Have you seen that cartoon that's going around that shows like 12 different identical drawings of Middle Eastern dudes, and then it has a picture of like a Cold War shoulder powered grenade launcher, and it said like, play the new United States game, figure out which Islamist self-defense group to arm. And it's like all these names of actual groups in the Middle East that all exist.
Wow.
And sound almost identical. And it's like, which one should you arm? United States, you know, who knows? And who knows who the...
Well, they said recently IS isn't even the worst one anymore. Now it's some group called Khorasan or something.
The Khorasan group sounds like... Doesn't it sound
Which is a town in Afghanistan. That's not a group exactly.
But it's called the Khorasan group. And it took... To me, the first time I heard that in the background on TV or something, I thought they were talking about like some Wall Street money management group. It sounds like it, doesn't it? The Khorasan group.
Sound like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, like Koch brothers or something.
The Koch brothers. I call them the Koch brothers because it sounds like crotch. But so I want to talk about, I watched Fox News today for 20 minutes.
I'm sorry.
I know. And I saw like four, I mean, you know how the Truth Chives channel, okay, we didn't talk much about Molyneux for a few days, and we're not going to much today, but I do have the new Molyneux challenge later. But you know how, like, you have to wade through all of Molyneux's thousands of hours of videos to find where he contradicts it, and True Shibes did the work for you.
Yeah, you can do that on Fox News with a screenshot.
You can do that on Fox News for, like, find five of them watching for 20 minutes. I watched, and it was all the Megyn Kelly show, and then they started with the Hannity show with the same people telling the same lies over and over and over. But, okay, in 20 minutes on Fox News, I heard some, you know, analyst, former government, I don't know if it's CIA, but some former government bigwig who now his job is going on Fox News talking. Now, this is interesting because I've rarely heard them actually acknowledge this except when Ron Paul said it. But he was talking about, and there's this theory out there that the terrorism is a result of the U.S. being over there. And
this theory.
And nothing could be further from the truth. And in fact, that's a dangerous theory. Then people shouldn't have it. So he was saying that. He's basically saying the fiends are terrorists, you know, by saying that.
Ron Paul was quoting like CIA intelligence briefs.
Yeah,
like he wasn't just making up some theory. That was what leading intelligence agencies were saying at the time.
Right. But so this guy says this, and like 5 minutes later, not even five, like 3 minutes, like the next news piece was Megyn Kelly saying, the Department of Homeland Security has just issued warnings to police departments and law enforcement all over America that there may be lone wolf terrorist attacks as a result of the recent U.S. bombings in Syria.
Right.
Yeah. So like the first news item is, that stuff they're doing has nothing to do with us. And the second news item is, be careful, they might attack us because of what we did over there, you know?
Right. Hornets don't swarm when you hit their nest. Be careful. We just hit their nest.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Okay, so
I saw a screenshot today that was in the sort of roll bar at the bottom that like is breaking news that the anchor isn't going to actually read.
I never see that because I like to have it full screen. Like when Fox comes on, I have to change my aspect ratio to read like the additional "we're all gonna die if we don't vote" stuff.
Yeah. Well, so the funny thing about this one was that the roll bar at the bottom says like Obama declares war on so and so, but then the like the graphic behind the anchor was conservatives upset that Obama wouldn't declare war.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like both images were on the screen.
I don't know, man. Fox News either like the scales are fully gone from my eyes, or else Fox News is just getting wackier and crazier and like even like the most. Okay, retarded. I'm trying to find a euphemism. Like even the most like stupid person who's the most status person should be seeing the glaring contradictions. All right. So the next one, let's see. They were talking about Al Siriri, who's the new like, I don't know, Bin Laden or something.
The new Bin Laden.
He's the new enemy, public enemy number one. They were saying like, this guy's an evil genius. He's got a chemistry. He's a genius in chemistry, and he's figuring out ways to make bombs that are so explosive it's terrifying, and they make normal bombs look like nothing, like child's play, and they're totally concealable, and they have all these magical powers that bombs have never had before. And they started like listing things that they were blaming him for, and one of them was the underwear bomber. And I'm like, this evil genius who makes new bombs that no one can conceive of, who also made this bomb that when they lit it, it just fizzled and went out.
Great.
Yeah,
okay.
Is he an evil like, genius, so or did he make the underwear bomb? You know, one or the other.
There's this also this funny narrative where they can't decide whether they're talking about like medieval savages who like don't know like how to bathe properly, or if they're talking about like social media chemistry geniuses that are like ahead of us and have all this advanced technology.
I think there's
both.
I think there's actually both. You know,
well, I'm sure that there are, but it's just funny that they can't pick a narrative.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you think about it, it's, you know, the weapons that are available to somebody who's not funded by a huge government, you know, the huge governments have armies and planes. You know, the guy working out of his out of a cave or an apartment is going to have, you know, medieval weapons and the internet. So,
yeah,
you know.
You know, there's lots not to like, but the one thing that I do like about this sort of recent bash of organizations is that they put the state right in the name. Right.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
they are a fledgling state.
Yeah.
Their goal is, and as many states began as terrorist organizations and then achieved the monopoly and became a government. And
maybe,
we're seeing it firsthand that this is how this comes
to
pass.
Maybe the government made up ISIL and they just put that word state in there to get the libertarians against them. You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Yes.
I saw one more inconsistency on Fox News in my 20 minutes of watching it. They were
just one.
They were talking about Ferguson and how there's still rioting going on in Ferguson, which could mean the police are rioting at people. But yeah, they were complaining about rioting about Ferguson. And then they brought out this thing that's like this kind of not really new, but it's like more and more prevalent on Fox. The Black Republican. They brought out the Black Republican in a suit to tell you why Obama's horrible.
Like there's just one?
No, there's like 20 of them, man. They have a whole passel.
They have a whole organization?
It's kind of like the blonde female lawyer. You know, they've always had like 20 of those. Now they've got like 5 or 6 Black Republicans who will tell you why Obama's horrible and why you should vote for Mitt Romney instead or, you know, Jeb Bush. But
so are you saying Fox News is practicing affirmative action in the people they interview? Is that what we're getting at?
They're not interviewees. They're kind of pundits. They're like, you know, probably not on the payroll, but they hire them from time frequently over and over and over. You start to recognize them, even the little tiny bit of Fox I watch in the background sometimes. But no, it's just a new thing they have. I think it's to say we're not racist and to say that hating Obama is not racist. Like we found the 5 Black Republicans in America and gave them jobs, and their job is telling you why Obama's horrible.
I mean, that's so funny because, like, criticizing Obama is not inherently racist, and being a conservative is not inherently racist, but intentionally trotting out a token black guy to make that argument is kind of racist.
It kind of is. Okay, so they were talking about how horrible the people in Ferguson are, basically, and they were talking about the problems in America right now.
Can I just get this off my chest before we go further? To this day, I can't hear the word Ferguson without thinking of the little brother in Clarissa Explains It All.
I can't think of the weird thing in 30 Rock of Smooth Move, Ferguson, which I'm not going to explain, and it's not very funny, but if you watch 30 Rock, and it kind of fits. I mean, it would make a good t-shirt. It would probably get you killed in Ferguson. But so they were complaining, the Fox pundit, blonde people, and the black Republicans were all complaining about how horrible everyone's acting in Ferguson. They were like basically sticking up for the cop that, you know, the cops that shoot young unarmed black Utes there. They were on the cop side, more or less, like, well, we don't know yet. You can't say he's a bad guy. And then they cut to Obama today at the UN talking about the shooting in Ferguson as indicative of, like, yeah, America has problems. We're not perfect. We're not to where we want to be, which I hate Obama, but that was not an unrational thing to say. And the Fox people were all like jumping on Obama for like bashing American exceptionalism, basically, by going before the UN and saying, there are still some problems in America. So on the one hand, they're saying
blasphemy.
They're saying, look at all these, the Fox people are saying, look at all these problems in America. Smash cut to Obama's horrible because he says there's problems in America. So I heard all three of these bizarre juxtapositions in 20 minutes of watching Fox, man.
It must be like a neocon's acid trip to watch that stuff. Like, they must feel at one with everything when they're fed all this garbage.
And, you know, the production is getting slicker. The blondes are getting blonder. The graphics are getting redder, whiter, and bluer. Like that, they've really
saturated all the colors, and all the legs are shiny.
Yeah, I really feel like they've you know, that behind the blonde lawyer ladies and the black Republicans, they have a team of you know, like social marketing PhDs in psychology trying to figure out how to manipulate people better.
When Bill O'Reilly retires, they're going to hire Hugh Hefner.
When he's 103.
Although he's more of a libertarian.
He has to be. I think Bill O'Reilly would be kind of horrified by him.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I'm kind of horrified by Hugh Hefner. I don't see anything wrong with what he does, but I'm kind of like, ew.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So moving right along, we are going to get to more Cards Against Humanity here. That was a big hit yesterday. I had a kind of bad day, but I'm kind of having a better day now. How are you doing?
I'm doing good.
Yeah.
I had a very busy day.
I got in a fight with Derek J.
Oh, no.
It was mostly my fault.
I'm taking Derek's side. Okay. I don't even have to hear the argument.
We'll just move on.
No, what happened?
I was trying to help him set something up on his computer, and he was like, I know. You don't have to tell me. Like, you know. Basically, it was a security thing, you know, privacy kind of thing, security thing. And there's certain things you have to do with this program. So I'm like, hey, let me call you up and tell you how to, you know, I volunteered. And he was like, I don't need your help, old man. Leave me alone. And I got indignant. I was in pain. I was having back pain. And I just like, I walked away from, like, he didn't do anything wrong, but I walked away from it saying and posting on Facebook, I'm done doing anything for anyone ever.
Oh, no.
That's the kind of day I had, man. We'll be back.
Well, worms.
Worms.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
So, Davi, I was just Q-tipping out my ears. Kids, Q-tip out your ears. Actually, they say on the Q-tip box, don't stick these in your ears. But
are you serious?
Yeah, I do. You're not supposed to put anything bigger in your elbow in your ear. That's what my mother used to tell me.
My mom used to tell me your elbow was the only thing you can put in. And then you would try and it's impossible.
That's the point.
That's just not how humans are built.
It's funny how parents repeat things that they don't really think about and just say over and over and over. It's from generation to generation. My parents were a previous generation than yours.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe they thought about it. They must have thought it was funny or they wouldn't have said it.
Yeah.
And they were right. It was funny.
Here's what I think about religion. Speaking of earwax, here's what I think about religion. I think that most of the rules and laws that religions have seem so innate to me that having them put down and codified in written form and tablet form and injectable form and smokable form, to me feels the same way as like when the government puts ads on TV, like, don't put anything bigger than your elbow in your ear, kids. Or I haven't seen that, but I've seen like I have seen the state of Wyoming steal my money to put ads on TV that say, don't pour used cooking grease down the sink.
Yeah,
I knew that when I was five. My mother taught me that. I just feel like writing the kind of stuff down that's innate, like don't steal, don't kill, don't fraud, don't be nice to your neighbors. I feel like all that stuff is, it just makes sense, man. Why does it have to be written down, Davi?
I wonder if it's from an era when it wasn't so obvious to people.
Well,
like if you think about like the medieval and pre-medieval world, the ancient world, like slavery was common. Killing people over a bar tab was common.
Yeah.
Like there were, we live in a much more civilized time than when most of these things were written.
And the Christian, Jewish, and Muslim food laws, a lot of them just relate to the fact that there weren't refrigerators then, don't they?
Maybe. Yeah. Probably. Yeah. I don't know.
Like, you know, don't eat this kind of animal because it'll kill you. Because before refrigeration and, you know, constant good cooking, you would have gotten worms from those cloven-hoofed animals.
Is trichinosis worms? Is that what it is? I don't even know.
Yeah, it's caused by worms.
Okay. Well, trichinosis is the thing they say happens when you don't prepare pork properly.
Yeah.
And I don't really know what that is. I just know that word.
So we got off on a tangent because I was Q-tipping my ears.
That was a heck of a tangent. You might have scrambled something, gone in too deep or something. I don't know.
I have an infected,
flipped the switch in there.
I have such an infectious brain worm.
Or maybe it's a reset button like on the back of a piece of electronics where you have to stick the
on your modem. Yeah, there you go. Hi, I'm in a good mood now. I'm not in a horrible mood anymore, and I won't yell at Derek J for just being a young punk who thinks he knows it all. Ooh. I'm not saying anything bad about Derek. Well, here's the thing. He didn't ask for my help. I jumped in and tried to give it to him when I was having a bad day. I was in physical pain with a backache that I've had for weeks. That comes and goes. I have good days and bad days. I've had it for years, and I have.
You imposed help on him when you didn't feel like
I
it.
I did. I'm like, saying? Hi, this is the non-voluntariest help desk. I will now help you. You know, yeah, it was kind of like that. But yeah, I mean, a part of it too is like basically having like 13 different show hosts that I'm all trying to do nice things for, and they all have like a little bit different personalities, a little bit different way you'd approach them. And I think I was like set on somebody else's setting when I called Derek. I don't know.
Okay.
But I was having a bad day already anyway, and I want to talk about this really weird thing that happened to me. I'll give you the punchline of this right up front is get everything in writing. So,
okay.
So there's
Hang
this.
On, let me write that down.
There's this this libertarian rock star. I'm not going to say his name because I still don't even know what happened. But so a few months ago, this guy, you know, I was like, hey, we're talking, we're chatting. Do you want to donate money to Fiend Phone? And he's like, you know, millionaire, and he's like, no, thanks. And we started talking, and I, you know, gave him some suggestions on improving his bad video and audio quality, and he's like, oh, I like that. Maybe I could hire you. What do you charge for consulting? And I'm like, well, for you, $75 an hour, and which is reasonable for the amount of work I do for somebody. And you know, I give people more time. I don't start an egg timer. I give them more than it's worth. And he said yes, is my remembrance of it. Wasn't in writing. Wasn't an email. It was, you know, Skype or phone or something. Or it was an email and I don't have it. But I saved most of the emails with this guy over the past couple months. There's scores and scores of emails of me typing, you know, five paragraphs of you should do this, get this piece of equipment, do that. And like actually doing tests for him where I would like set up cameras and lights and try to replicate what he's doing wrong and then fix it so it was right. And the other day I went and like, you know, we did an interview with him and I said, like, in the interview, like, and he's a great guy. We've had business dealings and I'm doing some consulting for him. And I have emails where I do have emails where I said, and you know, we should talk on Skype again soon so I can figure out how much you owe me for consulting. Like, I mentioned this consulting thing over and over and over and felt I was being paid to be consulting him. And I did a lot of work with him, more than I would do for free for, you know, anybody except like Nick Hazelton, who lives with his parents and doesn't have any money. You know, except for
that's
someone
the anarcho-yakadolist.
Yeah. Okay. You know, he's the only guy that I've worked this hard for free. Like, other people I charge for this kind of stuff. And I went to bill him the other day and I was like, okay, over the past couple months, I figured I'd done like 10 hours work, but I was being a nice guy. And I said, I think I've done about, I'll bill you for 6 hours.
I have that problem too. If I bought an egg timer, it'd be like giving myself a raise.
It would. So, but I said to this guy, like, you know, okay, you owe me, you know, 6 hours at $75. And he's like, I thought you were doing all that because you were a good guy. I didn't know I didn't agree to pay for consulting. It blew my mind, man. And then I like spent all this time going and finding the emails I could. And the, like, here's in your video where you have on your site where I said, and I'm doing consulting for this guy. And here's the email I sent you where I said, and get this microphone and that microphone. And by the way, we should talk on Skype to figure out how much you owe me for consulting. Like three or four proofs that we were engaged in me being paid for consulting. And the guy was just like, nope, I don't remember it, man. No recollection of that. To the point where it like convinced me, like, I don't even know. Did I? I remember absolutely that you were paying me for consulting. I told my wife I'm being paid to be consulting this guy.
Yeah.
I told you.
Well, the way you told the story, the first question was him asking you how much you charge for consulting.
Yeah.
Right? So are you sure that's how it started? Because that seems like the clincher.
My recollection of it, I can't remember if it was an email or it was this or that. And I do have an email where he said, you know, after I'd done a bunch of consulting and thought I was doing it for pay, you know, he was like, well, you know, how about instead of paying you by the hour, how much would you charge for the whole job? And I gave him a quote on that. He didn't write back. So I thought, oh, we're still doing it at this hourly rate. So,
and that's in the email. So that is in writing. I mean, an email is writing.
Yeah. Yeah. But it was all like, it all could, you know, when he's absolutely saying, oh, you didn't, we didn't agree to this. And I'm like, yeah, we did. But I don't have the email, or I can't remember if it was a Skype conversation or whatever. But like, I don't have the original germ of it. But I have all these emails back and forth of me referring to the paid consulting I'm doing. And he's like, I didn't hire you. I thought you were just a really nice guy. And, you know, I just felt like raped. And I was like, hey, man. So finally he gave me like, you know, three quarters of what the small amount I was asking for. I did like 10 hours of work. I was asking for 6 hours of pay and he paid me for like 4.5 hours or something. And like begrudgingly did that. And I don't know, man. I mean, he's convinced he hadn't hired me. I'm convinced he had hired me. I'm not saying anything to besmirch anybody. I'm saying don't ever not get anything in writing, save it and make it really clear. Like, I hate to do that with people though, to say like, yes, to be clear, you so-and-so have paid me X amount of money. You are, you know, like almost
signed in triplicate.
Yeah.
With witnesses.
Yeah. See, I never do that. I do stuff for pay for people all the time where I never do that. And the other thing is the only people that ever like say, I didn't hire you, you know, like ever have anything like that come up, which barely ever comes up, or it, you know, it's always somebody who's kind of, I hate to use the word, but like a nobody, you know, it's like somebody nobody's heard of who feels like the world owes me a living. And it's like the people who are kind of famous, you never have to do that with. They're just like, oh yeah, well here, you know, I'm a millionaire. Here's your 300, you know, here's your $400 or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know what happened, man.
You know, I almost don't want to do business that way. Like I had someone buy some pins from me and then ask me for permission to use them in a very public way. Specifically, it was part of a costume or a whatever for some sitcom, right? And I said, yeah, sure, whatever. Do whatever you want. I don't believe in intellectual property. And they said, well, actually, I need you to phrase it this way for our attorneys. And I almost wanted to reply, no, never mind. I don't want you using it.
Yeah.
you know, well, because
my compromise with that is to put everything out Creative Commons attribution license, because that has specific legal meanings. And if someone says to me, you have to phrase it that way, I just say, tell your attorney it's a Creative Commons attribution 4.0 license. You know, they
this
can
is
go
just
read
a
the
lapel
license.
Pin. This wasn't like a radio show.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, what my point is that like, if, you know, if we were in LibPair and we were choosing our clients and choosing our business partners and whatever, there is a real like monetary market value to me, for people I can do business with handshakes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Me too, man.
But
absolutely.
At the same time, like, you know, neither of you are villains in this story. This is a misunderstanding.
I honestly believe this guy is not trying to screw me over and absolutely believes in his head that he never said, yeah, I'll pay you. And I absolutely believed he said, yeah. And I don't make mistakes like that. And I don't know that, you know, I don't know this is a guy who does that kind of thing. It was just mind blowing to me. It took me, you know, something that normally I really enjoy doing, which is like vastly improving someone's audio and video. Here's the other thing too. This was kind of hurtful. The whole time I was doing this, he was like many times said to me like, yeah, man, you're really improving my audio and video. I really dig what you're doing. Thanks a lot. When we got into this discussion of payment, you know, he was like, well, even if I'm going to pay you, you know, you say I owe you 400 something. I think what you gave me, like not much of it was very useful and I should only have to pay you 200. So let's split it at three, whatever, you know?
So you had sour grapes after the
fact.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's nasty.
It is.
Not criminal.
No, nope,
but
just, I will never do anything with that person again. I won't even sell them ad space, man. I won't promote their stuff.
Wow. You that's know. Pretty serious.
I won't, man.
Worms.
I don't repeat that kind of feeling.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
So
it's all true.
Yeah. We're talking about getting stuff in writing here. You know, I used to get everything in writing. Like when I was making documentary films, I had like a one page document that I would have people sign. And, you know, like I said, like the only people that ever tried to bite me in the butt were like, here is an interesting one. Like I did DIY or Die, How to Survive as an Independent Artist. It has all these like kind of rock star level punk rock people in it, like Ian MacKay and, you know, Fetus and Lydia Lunch and Mike Watt and people like that. And like those people signed the agreement for him, were in it, let me like promote the movie based on them being in it, never said anything to me but, hey man, thanks for sending it to me, I like it. People often film me, but they never say what they're going to do and send me a copy of it. You sent it to me, I appreciate it. That's what all the rock stars did. The only people that gave me hassles were like, you know, an intern that came for one day and held a light for 2 hours for free, who was a film student, who like I bought him lunch, bought him beer afterwards, and he actually cost me money because I keep telling him everything to do. When the movie came out, his name was in it. He got an IMDb credit for holding a lamp for 2 hours. But he said, you owe me money because I worked on your film for a day. It was like 2 hours. You know, like this guy did nothing and just got in the way. Tried to gank me for money. And I was like, hey, Reed, here's the thing you signed. It said you're working for lunch, man. And then this one lady, like, it played in her town. She didn't even go to see it. There was a false ending. Like, the credits came up. At the end of the credits, there was, like, another outro, you know, a scene from the movie. And then it went back to the credits. The projectionist thought the movie was over and cut it. One of her friends that she sent to like make sure her name was in the credits, thought it wasn't in there, told her, and she sent me a letter saying I was going to hear from her attorneys because I didn't put her name in it. I did.
Wow,
put her
man,
name
people
in it.
Sweat so much about stuff.
Yeah, and the thing was like she wasn't even supposed to be in the movie. I went to film her boyfriend, and she was like standing in the corner of the stage in a slip, like looking cool, like just happened to be in a shot. So I got a release form from her. And she said she was going to sue me because I didn't put her name in it. And like her name was in it. Her friend just didn't see it, you know?
That's crazy. When I was in college, I worked on a film. It was a vampire film. And I probably put in like 100 hours. Like I was seriously invested, right? Like I was doing set design, a little costume design. I was doing continuity on the script. I edited the dialogue. Like I was seriously involved. And when it went from pre-production to post-production, they like changed companies or something. And I like didn't get dragged along with everyone else on the company because I had no role in post-production. And so I didn't end up on the credits and I didn't end up in the IMDb listings and I didn't get the like 1% of no money that I was supposed to get. And I don't care. I put it on my resume for years and years. And when they called up the script writer or the producer, whoever I put on as a contact, they confirmed that, yes, I worked on this movie. And that was worth it. You know, like I was working for lunch, you know.
And this lady was in this movie. She quote unquote worked for an hour or for 45 minutes. I filmed her boyfriend playing guitar, you know, in like fishnet lingerie on stage at CBGB's, and she like stood there with a whip whipping him. She wasn't even part of the show, and I was trying to frame her out of it. I didn't care about her. She just happened to be there, and she was like, oh, I'm part of the, I'm a star, you know. And he was famous. He, like, people knew who he was. She was just his latest prop. And she threatened to sue me because her friend didn't see her name in the credits of like an indie movie, you know. And it was showing at Gilman Street Project in Berkeley.
That's square, man.
Yeah, which is like the punk rockinist, like, you know, dressing room. No, go use the unisex bathroom with the graffiti on the wall. It's that kind of like level of stardom.
Worms.
People.
We've got to chill out and have a good time.
Yeah, we will. So let me finish up here. So I don't know what happened with that guy. It was just really weird. I thought he was, since he's a famous punk rock, famous libertarian, celebritarian, you know, millionaire guy, I thought, I don't have to get anything in writing with him. A handshake. His word is his bond, you know, but apparently I have to get everything in writing, and that kind of makes me sad. Yeah, people don't remember what they said. Ugh. So that's the kind of day I've had, man.
Too bad.
Yeah. It's like pulling teeth on a Wolverine to get part of the money for the work I did. And have someone say, like, well, your work wasn't that good, after saying it was good for months. People get what they deserve. And I'm just not going to help people anymore.
Worms.
Worms. Meowing. I want to get back to complaining. So
how do you know I wasn't complaining?
I don't speak cat. I don't, which is weird because I'm surrounded by them. They're all taunting me. So this well-meaning cat named Nicholas Scherer. I can't pronounce the last name, but a guy named Nicholas just posted on the Fiend site. I will donate to the Freedom Fiends if Michael W. Dean reads Markets Not Capitalism, and then he put a link, and talks about it on the show. I was a big listener of the Fiends, but have been gone quite a while and have come back to take a listen. Smiley face. Just send the money, Nick. I don't have time to read it. Davi told me he tried to read it, and it's not very readable, and okay, here's the week I've had. I'm working 40 hours a week for free to lose money now on the Freedom Fiends, because I just found out I have to pay $500 more a year to do this show because I have to get a second internet connection. I have to get DSL because they're so the only cable company in my town is so overselling it. The only thing I can do to be able to do this show is to buy $50 a month, get a DSL line also. Second of all, I'm going to have to read, I'm going to have to install the DSL myself. I have to read you're giving me homework, basically. You're saying, I love your show. It's done great things for me. Do a bunch of homework and I'll send you a little bit of money. Just send me the money, man. So I'm going to have to read this modem manual. Then I'm going to have to read the modem router manual because I have to get this other modem that I just bought today for $250. I thought it was $100, but with all the cables and everything, getting a new one, 8-port, I just spent $250, basically most of the money that I got out of this millionaire I did all this work for, who belittled me and berated me when I went to go get paid and said, oh, your work wasn't worth that much, after spending 2 months telling me my work was great and I'd done great things for him. So I had to just immediately spend all that money on more equipment for the Fiends. I have back pain. I don't know. I'm not going to keep complaining. I'm just saying, like, please don't give me homework with a little, like, carrot on a stick and say, I love your show. You've done great things. I love it. I listen to it. But if you do a bunch more stuff, I'll give you a little money for what I like about you. It's kind of like, it feels like a kick in the gut right now, actually.
Ask him if he'll pay you hourly to read it.
Yeah. I charge $75 an hour, and I want it in writing. And at this point, I want it in escrow. Davi will hold it. Yeah.
There you go.
That's what we need.
There are decent things to say about this book.
Let me interject. You know what we need, Davi?
Huh.
Here's $1 million idea, $1 million Bitcoin idea. A reputable Bitcoin, what's it called, where somebody holds the money until an escrow service.
An escrow. That's an escrow. Yeah,
we need an escrow. So when, you know, the millionaire hires me and then forgets he hires me, you know, it's like the escrow decides. And it would have to be somebody trustworthy. I think you are a very trustworthy person in the Liberty community, Davi. I think you could do it.
I would be willing to hold an escrow for someone, although as I understand it, the blockchain itself can hold an escrow for someone.
Yeah,
with like multi-signature transactions.
Yeah, but it has to really, it's complicated. It'd be easier to do with a person.
Yeah, I don't know how to do it. I'm just saying that it can be done.
Yeah, it hasn't been done right yet.
Okay. Well, my understanding is that escrows are essentially for very large sums of money when the contract is all written out, and sort of being the escrow is, in a sense, being the arbiter.
I don't think it has to be for a large amount of money. I mean, think about when some people are playing pool and betting $5 and they have their buddy hold the money, you know, their mutual friend that they both trust hold the money.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
So tell me about this book that someone I've never spoken to is assigning as homework and trying to pay me. He doesn't say how much. That's the problem with this contract, is I will donate $2 if Michael spends 40 hours reading this. It's not just a book. It's a series of books, isn't it?
Well, it's an anthology of essays by a number of different anarchist writers. Here's the thing. Have you ever heard of or read The Most Dangerous Superstition by Larkin Rose?
Yeah, I've read Larkin Rose's stuff.
So this book is sort of like that.
I know
book.
That guy. That's what he said when I met him. You know, I went to shake his hand, and he said, "Yeah, I know who you are," and wouldn't shake my hand and looked away.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm just talking about the title of his book.
I'm in a bad mood. So, but it's good radio.
All I'm saying is, this is a book where the title really does contain the most important thing for you to take from the book,
markets, and that
is
that not capitalism.
There is a significant enough difference between, or there's a distinction which can be made between markets and capital, free markets and capitalism, or what is termed capitalism, and that making that distinction in our heads is a valuable way to clarify what we're advocating from what the Koch brothers are advocating.
Yeah, I could see getting away from the word capitalism. I like the word anarcho-capitalist in the same way I like the word punk rocker when I was a punk rocker. I mean, it's like, it kind of has shock value. Yeah, it's macho flash. And so is anarcho. I mean, really, like Ian Freeman uses the word voluntarist on himself, and he has reasons for doing it. Two of the reasons are the word anarchist and the word capitalist come with a lot of baggage. But also, and this is a good thing to point out, saying I am an anarcho-capitalist is basically saying that's how society should be organized. And saying you're a voluntarist is saying anybody should be able to organize their part of society however they want. You know, if they want to be communists that are self-contained and don't steal from others, all good for them.
So, this is an anthology of essays. Here's the thing. When I get a book, what I really want from a book is I want a clear thesis. And then I want to play with that thesis like it's a jungle gym. Like, I want my brain to go into this book, fiction or nonfiction, and say, okay, if I entertain this thesis, what are the consequences of that? And for me, anthologies fail to do this because all of the writers have their own agendas and their own points, and they don't always agree. And so I'm going into a book like it's a playground where all the parts are broken. And so that, for me, that's just not enjoyable for a book. That's not saying it's not a good book. That's just not what I want from
a
book.
It's also a left libertarian book. You said, what did you say about it's like anarchists who understand the non-aggression principle but are kind of like
economically illiterate?
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, I don't have any desire to read that And somebody might say, well, then you're not a complete person because you're not considering all angles. I've lived with that angle, man. I've spent more time in person in the company of left anarchists by
far. I've lived in communes. Yeah. I have fully explored these ideas.
I have. You have?
Yeah.
Yeah. I've spent a lot of nights in them in Europe and America. And most of the girls I dated in the 80s were left anarchists in San Francisco. Yeah. I've heard that whole rap. I don't have any desire for it. And I also just don't have time to read anything. Basically, if I don't have time or desire to read a book written by someone who agrees with me 100%, who's the best writer in the world. I don't have time or desire to read a book by an anarcho-capitalist deist cat lover who's kind of cranky but laughs a lot. Like, that would be me. But if it was like someone like that that was a much better writer than me, I still wouldn't want to take time to read the book. I don't have time because all the books I write and read are basically tech books so I can help improve other people's lives, sometimes for pay, sometimes for free. And I'm feeling totally kicked in the gut today because I went above and beyond for this guy, this millionaire, who actually pleaded poverty when I went to get paid, who says he's a millionaire, or people think he's a millionaire, but he said, I'm broke, man. I just felt kicked in the teeth by the whole experience. Like, I went so above and beyond for this guy. I believed we had an understanding in place that he was paying me. And when I went to get paid, he was like, hey, I thought you were just a good guy, giving me all these hours of time, you know, because that's what you do. And I don't know. It's possible, you know, I said something, he wrote back and said yes to something else, and I misunderstood it. I will say there's about a 2% chance I made the mistake. I think there's about a 98% chance he made the mistake. I don't want to say he's evil and he's lying, but I will say that it was kind of sleazy that he said, oh, what you did for me wasn't worth much, after telling me for months how valuable my contributions were to his audio and video.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
So I don't want to disparage the contributors to the book, because the contemporary writers are people who I greatly respect, like Gary Chartier. Brad Spangler contributed quite a bit. The audiobook is read by Stephanie Murphy. Man.
Anthologies blow. You're right.
Yeah. So the other problem I had with the book is that a lot of the essays are actually by like 18th century anarchists like Benjamin Tucker and things like that. And there's a little bit of a language barrier there for me. And
do not be vainglorious when considering the free market.
Yeah. So made it a little difficult for me to digest. Here's the thing. Left anarchy, left libertarianism, it brings up some really important things about racism or sexism, or when does a profession become exploitative and things like that. And what I like about left libertarianism versus conventional political leftism is that they're searching for the voluntarist, the anarchist, the non-coercive ways of solving these problems,
I feel
as
like
opposed
they're just
trying to pass laws and things.
I feel like they're just thick libertarians, like the thickest of thick libertarians, and I'm a very thin libertarian.
And yeah, they are.
If people don't know what that means, to say again, thin libertarians believe like the non-aggression principle covers everything. That's it. And it doesn't, you know, you don't have to include your feminism or anti-racism or anti-whatever in your libertarianism. People are free to associate. If they want to be idiots and believe in stupid things, we won't associate with them.
Yeah.
I'm a thin libertarian, man, which is really bizarre to me that Chris Cantwell was on Free Talk Live saying like, hey, man, I don't know why everyone's picking on Stefan Molyneux. He's a great guy. When Chris Cantwell is also a thin of, you know, you got to be a thin, like, I'm a thin libertarian. That's my whole thing.
Well, he's a fat libertarian.
I'm a fat libertarian, too. But we're talking about in ideology. You know, he's like,
sorry, that was a cheap shot.
It really was. I was so cheap that I don't even like the guy. And I had to step in and say, I'm fat, too, to like defend against
I'm
the
fat
fatism.
Too. We're all fat libertarians.
It's because we sit around on the internet trying to change the world when we should be out like living it. No, but like Stefan Molyneux was like the thickest of the thick libertarians. You know, like basically his libertarianism is, well, there's, you know, the non-aggression principle is cool, but then read this 400-page book of theories I have and incorporate that. And once you've pledged allegiance to that, you can be a real libertarian.
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah. So I want to get off this. I'm not bashing this guy for suggesting a good book to me. I'm just saying I don't have time to read it. And Unless it's $75 an hour, the donation, I'm not going to take the time. I don't have the time. Put it this way. If I read this book, whether or not there's a donation behind it, the fiends will suffer because I barely have time to sleep, not have back aches, get enough exercise, make a living, which I don't do at the fiends, and do the fiends and keep it high quality. And I'm doing like right now, I'm working like 10 hours a week, 15 hours a week on this magnum opus like hour and a half video on how to podcast, because so many people have asked me and most of them don't have enough money to pay me what I'm worth.
That's where I want to go. My advice to this guy is to take his donation, buy a microphone, watch Michael's video on how to podcast,
and do a 20-part series
on markets not capitalism.
There you go. I thought you got bit by a bug or something.
Memory hole.
Okay. So the Molyneux Challenge when we get back.
Awesome.
The new Molyneux Challenge.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
I asked Dobby during the break if this is bad radio tonight, if I just sounded like a cranky old coot. And he was like, I don't know, I think it's good radio. You do sound angry, though. I mean, we're talking about a book review of, Markets Not Capitalism. You're like, let me interrupt and tell you more about this guy that, like, doesn't know how to honor contracts.
Yep.
Well, that has to do with Markets Not Capitalism.
Sure.
Yeah.
As a side note, I think I am learning to understand cat. When I meow for this show, I definitely think the look on my cat's face is, what are you doing, you idiot?
Yeah, you're speaking wrong. It's not good cat radio, he's thinking.
Learn cat. Get a job.
You know what's kind of interesting, too? I haven't really talked about the fallout from me talking about Molly and the hateful videos that were made out about me. You saw them, right?
Yeah, I saw them.
Yeah, it was like calling my wife a, streetwalker and saying that my daughter who died of cancer was a genetic piece of garbage and things like that. They're out there. Don't look for them. Yeah.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Had to meow because we have two fans. We have Jim Jesus and then we have someone named the Burger King, and the Burger King just tuned in and told me, and the Burger King has basically said he or she likes the show but hates that we meow and thinks it's infantile. And I wasn't gonna meow there, but the Burger King's listening, so I had to meow.
Well, he just doesn't get it.
Yeah, he doesn't get he doesn't know about meow therapy. You can meow your way to mental health. It's a theory we have. It's kind of like universally preferable meowing, I think.
Yeah, and if you consider, liberty is a form of mental health, then you can meow yourself to libpear.
Yeah. Yeah, worms. So I don't know. I think I'm done with the Molyneux Challenge. I just want to know about his son. I want to know where he is.
Yeah, me too.
What his email address is, if he wants to be on the show. But just in general, I want to know the story. I want to know why he's not speaking with his dad anymore. Maybe it's the other way around. Maybe the dad isn't speaking to the son. I don't know. But so I've been told by our two fans that I'm being kind of a bummer tonight. So Dobby Barker is going to bring you up with the uplifting story of how intellectual property can kill you. That's our unicorn chaser for that. That is actually
we seem to be getting lower into this hole. So what we need to do is keep digging our way out.
No, your thing is more. Nobody died in your story.
Nobody died. Nobody was really. Their life was not immediately in danger.
But it could have been.
But it could have been. And this is sort of an unintended consequence of intellectual property regimes. So. This isn't an article. This is an anecdote. So I don't have a lot of the sort of medical details because this is something that my neighbor explained to me. And this was happening to him, and he's not a doctor, so he didn't even really understand all the details. But essentially, he's having heart problems. He's an elderly gentleman. And he needed a particular surgery. It wasn't like life threatening. It wasn't like emergency room time. It was like scheduled a surgery. He needed to go in. It's a life.
You know what's kind of funny? The term elective surgery usually means, you know, like breast implants or like stuff that's just, you know, because you're vain. But elective surgery is actually any surgery that's not emergency surgery. Most surgery is elective surgery. That term doesn't mean you don't need it. It means it's scheduled rather than they do it now and wake the doctor up to do it or you're going to die.
Yeah. So this is a life-saving surgery. He will die of his heart condition if he doesn't have it in some reasonable amount of time. But that amount of time is sort of up for debate, and doctors say it's not terribly urgent and it's not going to kill him to schedule it for next week instead of this week. But what happened was he went to the hospital for his scheduled elective surgery and waited in the waiting room and was there for a few hours. And this is also a man who's sort of almost an invalid. Like, he needs help to move around. He can't really drive on his own. He had to get a friend to help him get to the hospital and spend the day with him. So this was an inconvenience for him. And the doctors said, yeah, we're sorry we made you wait all this time, but, you know, we've tried everything we can. And it turns out we can't do your surgery today because the software is at another hospital.
Wow.
And so
that's scary, man. The software.
What's going on is to perform this surgery, they have this sort of weird, like, high tech medical bed that they put you on. And it has all the sort of like, you know, monitoring stuff, and it's like hydraulic, and it essentially just makes the surgery easier for the doctors. But the table doesn't know how to operate itself. The table needs a different software package for every kind of software or for every kind of surgery that it's designed to do. And those software packages are probably about as expensive as the table itself. And so hospitals that all have this piece of equipment share the software, and it can only be installed in one place at one time because of intellectual property. Wow. And they accidentally double booked this surgery with another hospital, and the other hospital had the software package, and so they couldn't use the table, and so they couldn't do the surgery. And I'm just thinking, like, this is so, like, this is so Kafka-esque. This is so, like, catch 22, just like madness that, like, you know, we have an internet. You can duplicate a piece of software and email it to someone.
You'd violate some rule, some agreement, man.
And yeah, so in his case, you know, it could have been lethal. Even though the doctors assessed it as non-urgent, it could have been more urgent than they thought that it was. We are talking about a heart condition. But it just makes me wonder, like, what about the patient who does have a serious condition and needs a surgery immediately, and the table doesn't have the right software? Like,
yeah,
it's just like, to me, this looks like bad news. And you talk about, like, the way this culture is going, the government is going to get more involved in medicine, which means that this is going to be more prevalent. This problem is going to get worse.
I want a new planet. Can we 3D print one yet?
I'm ready to 3D print a new planet. Yeah.
You know, do you ever read EULA's electronic user end degree? You know, the thing that you, the contract you signed by clicking install. You ever read those things?
No, I tried once.
I've read a few of them. I've read one for Microsoft Windows and just gave up because it was too long. And I've read one for Java, you know, the thing that, like, drives video games and embedded electronics and whatever.
Okay.
The Java one, both of them used to say that you should not use either one, Windows, or it was some version of Windows, like Vista or 98 or 95 or something. And I think Java may still have this, but at one time I know they both had it, that it said that you should not use them for life support systems, you know, or anything that's mission critical or that lives depend on it. And I'm thinking, like,
yeah,
that's kind of funny because, you know, like, everything the U.S. government does, with the public at least, is run by Windows, it seems. Isn't the government supposed to be, like, something we can't live without? But apparently they're using off-the-shelf software that's not good enough, that as a disclaimer of this is not to be used for things that are very important.
Well, maybe this is why the government loses sensitive data by misplacing briefcases so often.
Yeah.
Or their websites get hacked or whatever. Maybe it's because they're using the wrong equipment.
You know, one of our longtime fans and guy that talks to us a lot, and I think he's donated, and I've probably interviewed him on the Gumbo, wrote me and said, you guys really need to do an episode or an expose on genetically modified foods. I think that's the biggest threat to human liberty right now. And I'm like, I don't know, man. I don't want to cover first of all, it's like I'm not an expert. I'd have to get up to speed. Second of all, I'd rather talk about cats and like millionaires that don't pay their bills and complain about, you know, who's defueling who and just have fun and laugh at everything. But the other thing is, like, I really don't like to cover complicated projects with many arguments on both sides. And I'm sure people are saying, wait, there's only one side with genetically modified. Okay, but it's like, I don't want to cover something that like Alex Jones covers three times a month. And there's like 20,000 other podcasts out there with strong opinions on it. I don't want to do that. In the same way, I don't even want to talk about how ridiculous it is that, you know, the IRS lost a bunch of emails that were demanded when the NSA is keeping track of everything. Like, that's ridiculous, but we don't even talk about that kind of stuff. It's not that kind of show. I don't know. I guess people who – I would say to anybody who feels passionate about something, buy that $50 microphone that we advertise on the sidebar. Buy the $12 mic stand. Buy the 50-cent pop filter and start a podcast, man. I mean, the Fiends aren't that – put it this way. The Fiends are popular, but we're certainly not popular enough that by covering a topic once, we're going to change the world. So if you feel passionate about it. Yeah,
we're also certainly not going to become the anti-GMO radio show. Like, yeah. We're not going to get stuck on that topic for months and months.
I'm not anti-GMO. I'm anti-government involvement and intellectual property on GMOs. I'm anti, you know, the things where farmers buy some seeds and then they end up like indebted to that company like they're slaves. I'm against that. I'm not against the idea of tinkering with DNA.
Sure. I mean, this is also sort of like fundamental to just sort of a market approach is you're looking for unsatisfied market demand. And a lot of these topics are that market is saturated. The market of podcasts that talk about GMO food is saturated.
Well, I told him that and I was really kind of honored by his response, which was, he said, weird. I don't listen to any other podcasts, so I'm not really aware of what's being covered. I thought that was pretty cool.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, that's cool.
But if you search GMO podcast, you're going to get a billion things, probably including like something by Monsanto, a podcast probably about how great GMOs are. Who knows?
Yeah. I don't know. If you had a podcast that was explicitly about GMO foods, I imagine popular. It would be by some lefty that was trying to like ban Monsanto and put the CEOs in sticks or something.
I don't know. It's one of those kind of like crosses the left-right paradigm. There are libertarians and small government Republicans who are anti-GMOs. There's a lot of Republican farmers who've been wiped out by those intellectual property thing.
Yeah, but that's an intellectual property issue. Know, like this is another instance. Intellectual property kills. It's not that growing more food is a bad idea. Right, it's that going after your neighbor because they're using your copyrighted, because your flour talked to their flour and produced a copyrighted pumpkin. Like that's
well, that's why Kevin McKernan, our friend and a listener, a guy who actually came to Liberty listening to the Fiends. That's why I'm a big fan of that guy. He's a DNA scientist who worked on the Human Genome Project, was actually like honored by Clinton at the White House for that, later became a libertarian, runs a company that helps like, you know, find cures for cancer by, you know, treatments for cancers by looking at people's specific DNA. One of the things he did, like as a hobby, was he went to all the trouble to actually sequence the genome of marijuana, and he patented it in a defensive patent so nobody else could patent it and say, you can't use this. Like he made it freely. He That's basically cool. patented it and made it open source so anyone could use it.
I mean, I appreciate that, but even the notion that you could patent or copyright a genome that you've discovered is bizarre. Like... That would be like if like you're a chemist and you come up with the periodic table.
I don't want to talk. We'll have Kinsella on again sometime. I don't want to talk about the things everyone else talks about. I want to talk about the history of the Fiends. What questions were unanswered last night? Then we'll play some Cards Against Humanity for the last bit.
What answers were unquestioned last night?
You asked about equipment.
Yeah.
We've gone through a lot of equipment. And basically, by the time NEMA got – basically, there's been this running joke of the one – I finally bought the last piece of gear I need to do the Fiends. And I really was – I'm there audio-wise, but I'm not really – I have to suddenly buy these other two modems and pay for DSL now, apparently. But we
just
went,
when you thought you were complete,
you know, we went through like 30 different microphones, and I bought and sold and gave away a lot of microphones, and you know, basically came down to like what the co-host needs to be using if they don't have a lot of money, and it's that $50 mic that we advertise on the Right Sidebar, man. So all the co-hosts are using it except for one who's using the wrong mic. Oh no, he bought the right mic. It's 12 people using that mic, man, and it works well. Listen to Dobby.
There you go.
Adobe's using it. Go to the Freedom Fiend site. Go to the Right Sidebar. Click on the microphone picture.
Worms.
Listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Yeah. I think we just hit the cuss dump by accident. So if everything sounds wobbly and weird. You know, it's funny, Davi. Whenever I talk about something that a lot of people care about, and I talk about it on the show and talk about how I don't want to talk about it and I don't really care about the arguments and it doesn't matter in my life, three or four people just emailed me with their opinions on GMOs. Like, what part of I don't want to talk about, I don't care. What part of I don't care do people not get?
Be a violation of the non-aggression principle.
Yeah, I think
you just said you didn't want it in your brain, and yeah. What do? They go putting it in your brain,
and they mean well.
Your brain is your property.
They mean well, but I agree to their social contract by clicking on the email.
Oh, okay.
So this is kind of totally funny. There's we're gonna play Cards Against Humanity, the Jim Jesus Libpear deck. He calls it something else. It's the Lolbertarians, LOLbertarians. Expansion deck. It's kind of funny. Thumbscrews, who's somebody on YouTube, commented, why does it seem like half the people I argue with on the internet are randomly generating their comments with your deck of cards? All right, go ahead. Lay it on me, brother. Cards Against Humanity, LOL. I call it the Libpear deck, but go ahead.
Don't blank me, bro.
Don't free market me, bro. Don't the futility of the voting process me, bro. Don't Christopher Cantwell me, bro. That one works.
There you go.
All right. I'll do three for each one.
Do three for each one. All right. The most recent video. In the most recent video, Stefan Molyneux explains the truth about
the social contract.
He's done that.
Filing a false DMCA report. That's one.
Is that
them.
A card?
That's a card. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. That's the right one for him. Okay. Go ahead.
Adam Kokesh was most recently arrested for
voluntarily blank. Letting your children starve.
He doesn't have any children, does he?
I don't think you understand the game, because I keep saying, like last night we were saying stuff and you're like, that's not true.
Yeah,
that's not true is that kind is of the point the of the game, man. Okay, or just that sounds absurd, or that's so right on. Any of those are acceptable. So what was the last one again?
Adam Kokesh was most recently arrested for blank.
Colloidal uranium enemas to keep away the New World Order.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah. All right, next one.
Let's see. At next year's Pork Fest, they're going to have blank.
Broadcasting into space to planet Libpear 2019b in the Alpha Centauri region. They will, because we'll be on radio there.
Because that'll be us. Yeah. We'll be doing that at 1 a.m. when people come tell us to keep it down.
Yeah, that was funny. I haven't had a noise complaint in 20 years, and I go to Pork Fest, like the loudest place on the partiest place on Earth, and I get a noise complaint. Because our radio show's 1 to 3 a.m. East Coast time, and we're doing it through speakers with the windows open up in the media room.
Yep.
We closed the windows. Otherwise, people would have immediately gotten together and homesteaded a ring around us to prevent us from leaving the media room.
That would have been all right. We would have had a phenathon.
Yeah. So go ahead. What's next?
Having outgrown my childish libertarian fantasies, I now believe in
Bitcoin.
that's oddly accurate.
Yeah, it is. A lot of people. How about the Illuminati or a Gadsden flag?
I now believe in the Gadsden flag.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of the Gadsden flag. It's vague.
Having outgrown my childhood libertarian fantasies, I now believe in Marx's labor theory of value. Okay, having outgrown my childish libertarian fantasies, I now believe in syndication via LRN satellite to one guy in Africa. Or how about buying a sheet of acid on the Silk Road? Okay, go ahead.
Let's see here. A post-scarcity utopia can be achieved now that we have blank.
Worms.
Worms.
No, the NSA. do the card again. Challenge me again.
The previous one or a new one?
That new one.
A new one. Anarcho blank. That sounds like an awful lot like blank.
Thousands of Dogecoins worth 23 cents. give me another one.
According to a Salon article, libertarianism will eventually lead to blank.
A magical mom jean wearing leprechaun. Give me one more.
Anarchy, who will build the blank?
Spanking.
Who will build the spanking? That's an excellent question.
All right, brother man. It's a good show. Sorry if I was cranky, but, you know, you get your money's worth on the Fiends, I think.
Hey, you know, hopefully we've had a little healing on the Fiends tonight.
I think we have. I feel better about people that owe me money.
Well, worms.
I feel better about how nobody keeps their word. Worms.